Poncho Sanchez and Mongo Santa Maria sharing this wonderful tune, Conga Blue. It's the title track from their 1996, sorry, album. And it's great to have them together. Of course, Mongo Santa Maria is gone, but before he took off, he did a lot of really incredible work, especially in the area of jazz. And what I like especially about this particular album, Poncho Sanchez is Mexican and Mongo Santa Maria is Afro-Cuban, was Afro-Cuban. So I liked the combination of the two. And they both have a long history of doing work in the African American jazz community. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And what do you know? I'm getting better. I had some stitches in my mouth. They're gone. So I still have some more healing to do, but I'm in good shape. And I start off with an announcement. I will be repeating it because it's going to be pretty important. I'll be coming to New York to give a talk on Sunday, April the 26th, at the community church. This is a follow-up to a talk I gave just last year, and we had such a great crowd, and we had such a wonder. I was overwhelmed, overwhelmed. I didn't know where all these people were coming from, and we literally shut down the place. We stayed and talked with each other and just had a wonderful fellowship with each other. It was just a very, very uplifting time. And I'm hoping that we can repeat that again this year. It's going to be on Sunday, April the, not April, sorry, Sunday, May the 26th, at the Community Church, which is at 40 East 35th Street. I want you to mark your calendars and make sure you're going to be there. I want to see your face in the place. That's Sunday, May the 26th, and it is going to be at 1 p.m. So, but registration, and don't be afraid of the word registration, it just means I want to know who is there. It's free. We just want to be able to begin to build our community. So, Sunday, May the 26th at 1 p.m. is when the talk begins, but we have registration starting at 12:30. And of course, you'll be treated to something to eat and drink, and most importantly, to the company of really fine people, wonderful, incredible people. We'll all get together on that Sunday and have a great time while we take care of business, which is building community, the kind of community we desperately need now, where people are involved and engaged in doing the kinds of work that we need to do to build ourselves, to build our community, and to actively engage in precipitating change. So, mark it on your calendar. I'll remind you once more before the program ends. Sunday, May the 26th. Set aside that afternoon. At 12:30 is registration, which is free, and the talk begins at 1 p.m. It is going to be at the Community Church, which is at 40 East 35th Street. That's between Madison and Park, or Park and Madison, whichever way you're approaching the church. And we'll have a great time, and I'd be delighted to see you. I was just overwhelmed, as I said last year. It was very emotional indeed. And at the same time, you know, you feel this welling up of emotion inside you as if you're about to cry. But at the same time, you just want to rejoice that so many of us came together and had such a wonderful time just meeting and greeting each other and exchanging good thoughts and good vibes with each other. So let's do that again this year, and we will have a great time. All right. Now, what the heck is going on? Are we having a race or just having a series of blow-ups and blowouts? Are we marking time or are we actually moving somewhere? My sense is that we're getting involved in skirmishes all over the place. Well, you know who has not let up at all on skirmishes? I'm referring to Congresswoman Ilhan Omar from Minnesota. I give up on the Congresswoman. I shouldn't say that, but she seems not to care what she's doing and the likely consequences of what she's doing. So it's a big fight. Every time you see her name in the newspapers or on television, it's because she is enmeshed in one fight or the other, which has nothing to do with legislating. Nothing to do with it. Just useless skirmishes that she's having, arguing about things that are not on the legislative agenda. So I don't know, I give up. I did suggest some words of advice, two words of advice, and she's not taking heed. The advice was just shut up. Shut up and do your job. Concentrate on that, and we will be so happy about that. And so would you, because you're actually doing what you went to Washington to do. All right. So we have the president and the people of his administration, whoever is left or whoever is coming on, already taking the attitude they don't have to obey the law. They don't have to do anything except what they want to do. This is a renegade operation. When you have the Attorney General saying without fear, he may not choose to appear before Congress to answer any questions because he's not sure he likes the order of the program. And he just may not appear. Or he may not like the questions that are being asked. So, my goodness, we've come a long way. We have people who are targets of prosecution feeling bold and brazen enough to demand what they are to be asked and what are they not to be asked. They have to call the shots, even as they are targets. That's unusual. That's very unusual. Meanwhile, Judge or former Judge Andrew Napolitano, who was a commentator, legal commentator on Fox News, appears to have irritated President Trump because it is his analysis, according to the report, the Mueller report, that the president. There's more than enough evidence, he says. This is his view. There is lots and lots of evidence that the president has committed several acts of collusion and obstruction of justice. Now, that is particularly noteworthy because, Fox News is said to be an acolyte station, propping up the Trump administration and giving him legal cover. Not so with Judge Napolitano, very different from Judge Pirro, who is just blatantly, she doesn't care what people think. She is devoted to defending Donald Trump. But Andrew Napolitano, for some time now, has taken a more reasoned approach to the law. And his opinions reflect a deliberate effort to study the law and to study the fine points and implications of the law before he opens his mouth. And it seems that he's about to get smacked by Donald Trump because he expressed an opinion that the Mueller report has more than enough ammunition to support legal action and impeachment of the president. Speaking of impeachment, our favorite girl, Hillary Clinton, is still there barking about how she was robbed of the presidency, and how Trump was absolutely the reason that she lost the 2016 election. Well, I don't buy that. And I think somebody in the Democratic Party ought to advise her that she is, in fact, endangering whatever it is the Democrats have in mind in terms of opposing Trump. It can't be about her again. She's lost the opportunity to make her case. If she wanted to make a case about losing the election because of Trump, she did not prove it. She did not submit a corresponding documentation, witnesses and so forth. All she did was run around making a charge. Now, the charge may very well have had merit, but she did not prove that within the time span that one would think is reasonable. And I don't know why she has already began to act as a spoiler in this upcoming 2020 election, where she has imposed herself, imposed her argument, and imposed her demand is, in fact, that the Democratic Party ought to take care of her business. And her business is she rightfully owns that win. She rightfully owns the presidency and was robbed of it. And so she's making noises again as if to suggest to Nancy Pelosi and the leaders of the Democratic Party that they ought to turn things around, away from what they have to do to get a win in 2020 and pay attention to her grievance of 2016. I think somebody ought to tell her it's not about you. You did not proceed, and there's a reason she did not proceed. There are many reasons she did not proceed with her complaint. Okay, if you think you were robbed of the presidency and manipulated, the vote was manipulated to make you lose and make Trump win, you did not proceed with that legal question in 2016. You come now in 2020 as if you are a viable candidate, and you can't retroactively claim your position. You did nothing to indicate that you were sufficiently aggravated by the loss, that you had such a legitimate argument against Trump. You did not do that in 2016. or 2017 or 2018. You come now on the eve of the 2020 election, and all you're doing is railroading people's concentration. I think it is a deliberate act. As a matter of fact, a kind of extortion. You will pay attention to me. You will. Because I lost this 2016 election because of Trump. He took it away from me. You can't, it seems to me, you can't make these claims, which on the face of it are baseless, in 2019 going into 2020, when the election will be held, and act as if you're running for the first time, or that you are entitled to retroactively derail the concentration of the party and the thrust of the party to take care of your complaints. You didn't do it. You blew it. You can't do it now. And she should be advised to shut up. Take your loss and move on. But you see, we know the Clintons have a major problem. They have several of them, in fact. One of which is that they're quickly running out of money. That's why they're doing all these talks and so forth. But in her head, she still fantasizes that she is a legitimate candidate with a sufficient number of people, a sizable number of people, still wanting her in office and still willing to support her. So even if it looks like, and that's what it looks like, even if it looks like she's being an interloper, we have the Democratic Party engaging now with the Republican Party more and more actively in terms of the 2020 election. All right, which means that you're dealing with a whole different reality. You're dealing now with possibly electing a new face in the White House, and you're dealing with the challenges of facing a president who people may not like. But the fact shows that he is a formidable candidate. You can't come as a, you know, Jenny come lately in 2019 and think you are going to turn this whole thing upside down so that everybody's concentration is on you and your complaint that you were robbed. You were robbed of a certainty, of a certain election in 2016. And here you are to seek revenge in 2020. And that now necessitates people taking their attention away from new candidates who are in the field, almost 20 of them. And you come on the scene with the expectation that you will take some of their muscle away from them and arrogate it to yourself, rebuild a campaign that says, I could win this election against Donald Trump, and I have it in mind to do exactly that. I'm running as a Democrat. You haven't done anything as a Democrat. You haven't campaigned. You haven't contributed to the discussions that the nation has been engaging in. The only thing that you have done since 2016 is talk about you. And see to it, you and your husband, how much money, how much more money you can make on the lecture circuit. But she's discovered, I should say they have discovered, a great surprise. They're not as well loved as they thought they were. And so I think her behavior suggests that she is going to make it difficult for Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats to publicly rebuke her for I should say, creating a scenario in which whatever strength the party has managed to build, and you know, they're climbing a steep hill. Here comes Hillary Clinton, and she is threatening to deal it a death blow. She's looking for a gift from the Democratic Party, which she believes she's owed. What is that gift? I don't know. Maybe make me a candidate or partner me with somebody who is going to be doing very well. And we will run as a team, even though she doesn't qualify for it. But that's how they do. That's how they do. So I don't know what to make of this race, except that I want to say this to you, and I mean it sincerely. However this turns out, the most important thing that we need to understand is what is the state of affairs with this thing we call democracy? How does it affect us? We're trying to play by the rules. Are they playing by the rules? We're trying to observe the letter of the law. Are they observing the letter of the law? Are they behaving in a manner consistent with what we expect of leaders in this country? Everybody seems to be, in one way or the other, in some form of crookedness. Are we proud of these people? Are we confident in their ability to lead a nation? Are we not sick and tired of the many embarrassments that we suffer both domestically and internationally by someone named Donald Trump and everybody that is in his administration in one way or the other is compromised? Are we not fed up with this? Are we not, have we not had enough disgraces? Do we feel any need at all to say, I cannot be part of this? It's like forcing you to be in a gang. This is how we behave. You got to support it. And you better be quiet about it as you support it. Don't object to anything we do, because our aim is to win at any cost. That's where we are as a nation. Are you satisfied that this is where we are? And that, worse, we shouldn't expect anything better? Because no matter where you look, you're seeing variations of the same theme. The Democrats are corrupt. The Republicans are corrupt. Even the progressives are playing fast and loose. Something has caused a wide fall from grace. I don't feel good about anything political, because they have so corrupted the institution and debased it, and they have forced us to debase ourselves. It's not a good feeling. Is there anyone on the horizon that you see who can do that kind of work of removing the stench of politics from what we have to deal with today? To have a faith that this country does stand for something. Honor. I know all these words you think are cliches, but I feel very seriously about them. You don't feel good, because the minute you start mentioning words like honor and justice and whatnot, you know you're not talking about the system we're dealing with today. You're talking about a system that might have existed decades ago. We've gone down the tubes. Everybody is operating by a whole different code of ethics that you do not recognize and you do not want to embrace. How do they sleep at night? They sleep at night because they long ago lost their souls. So as races start shaping up, what are you noticing? What is the value system that most candidates are beginning to talk about? I mean, real, that you think is real. Not public relations value system, but real, genuine, serious, pro-people, pro-country, pro-new vision. We'll talk about this as soon as we get back from this short break at 888-874-4888, right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead, and we're getting a little bit esoteric today as the race for the presidency is shaping up and gelling, and you get a sense that people are formulating their philosophical and political approaches to the popular vote. What are they talking about? What are they hoping that you would believe? And do you believe it? I noted the entry of late, a very aggressive entry of Hillary Clinton, who certainly has not disqualified herself from something. I don't know what it is that she's looking for. Is she looking for the Democratic Party to carry her water again this time around on the same idea, the same accusation she made that she was denied election in 2016 because of Trump's illegal campaign. So we're looking at how things are shaping up and what your mind tells you is actually happening. How does it make you feel as a citizen in the midst of all this chaos and confusion? And do you think we are in good shape in terms of what the people feel? George, you're on the air.
Hi. I want to just give a plug here. We're talking about elections. I hope the folks are going to look at Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman from Hawaii, who is, her main thing is, you know, end the regime change wars and you know, bring the money home and all that. She is a congresswoman forever. She was in Iraq twice. She's a soldier and all that. Are you aware of her?
Oh, yes, very much so. But we are not really discussing today any individual candidate. Any particular candidate. We're talking about, as we understand politics, what exactly do we think we are seeing and experiencing in this so-called presidential election? Grabad and any other candidate, they're just candidates. And of course, they would have certain things that they're pushing and certain things that they're against. Fine. But we're not dealing with that today. We're talking about what is the genuine feeling on the part of voters, never mind the candidates. What do you feel as a voter Do you feel good about this election? George is gone? Okay. That's what we're talking about. How are you feeling as a potential voter? Do you feel good about this election? Do you feel patriotic? Do you feel that this whole exercise of voting means something this time around that might be different from any other time that you voted? Do you feel you have power and authority? Do you feel you are a part of change in this country? Or do you feel that you are being set upon, you're being manipulated, and by a system that does not deserve your good vote? Look what they've done with good votes. Look at what this administration has produced as a government. How do you feel repeating the cycle? You supposedly are voting, but is it, is your vote worth anything by these people? Do they value your vote? Do they understand what this process really means? Do they care? Do you get a sense that they're making an effort, at least in this regard, to convey to people, we understand what the vote means. And this is why we won't want to lie to you. We won't want to steer you wrong. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air. Khalil?
Hello. Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. Yours too.
You're great. Listen, I know I'm not feeling comfortable. That's the question. And the reason I'm not feeling comfortable, I'm a Democrat. I vote in federal elections and local elections. But I'm feeling uncomfortable because the power of right Mills 6 has depicted. Apparently, they want our country to do exactly what it's doing right now. Otherwise, they will be forcing the law. And I'm glad you brought up, look at the Attorney General. The audacity of him to even contemplate not showing up for questioning when his whole existence as Attorney General is questionable.
Well, not only that, it happens to be the law. When you are subpoenaed, you don't have, you don't have choices. Especially when you are supposed to be the Attorney General, you're supposed to know that. When Congress subpoenas you, you show up. You don't have a choice.
But you see, you know what? Let me say this. It took my breath away when the other day I saw this orange fascist announce that there had been a coup. And if you notice, he engages, and the GOP, they engage in a lot of projection, because what he was describing was exactly what he and his administration had done. A coup had taken place. Yes. I mean, it's very simple to me. It's as plain as day. Now, he is lawless. He's inserted people at key positions that will maintain lawlessness. Now, the Attorney General is a shill, and everyone, I'm old enough to remember his transgressions. And, this has been unbelievable. So we have a criminal charged with enforcing the law. This is really, so what I'm saying is that, no, I'm not feeling comfortable because on my side of the spectrum, Tom Perez appears weak. There are too many people running. It's too much confusion. They should have vetted by now about 7 people, maybe, completely vetted. So there's no surprises toward the end. Because that's what kicks the Democrats is last minute. They didn't do enough opposition research on their own people, and there's some type of scandal, and then that's that. And so, this is why it's very unsettling. I don't know what, we've moved into fascism, and people better wake up and accept that fact. there has been a coup. So the president was right in that respect, except that he's the perpetrator and he's mentally ill. And we, you know, we're codependent now. We're an enablers and codependent because we're being led along this rocky road by someone who is unstable. It's like if you have a drug addict living in your household and they ruin the household because you refuse to kick them out of the house, but it's affecting everyone else's lives. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's exactly what I think. I agree with you with that analysis. Thank you so much for calling in and contributing today. Thank you so much. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello, David.
Hello. You know, in my experience in training pilots, one of the things that I had to do was adopt a redundant type of approach, going over and over again the same thing. And as we have this discussion, it makes me think that people are just not getting the fact that this is a place that's not run by them. It's run by a ruling class. And you have to keep saying that over and over again for some people to get it. You know, the election is interesting. But, you know, those people who on the ballot are usually those people who are approved by those who rule. And, you know, no matter how you look at it, a ruling class never voluntarily gives up its power. And that has not changed over the years since the Constitution was made to benefit those who rule. And people have to get it. The system is corrupt from top to bottom. This is not something new. And people, some people have gotten it. They've just retired altogether from voting, and they haven't done anything. And the whole setup is just rigged to get people's attention on a system that is fail. I mean, but this is a system that makes it possible to have one of the most successful imperial powers in the world, and that's the United States of America, and not a place that is there to benefit the good of the mass population. It's to benefit the ruling class and the other class that they are interested in is so-called middle class, which is really the working class. And they divide the working class away from the lower class or the poor people. You know, divide and conquer. That's one of the techniques those who rule have for running things. So you have to carry on this circus every couple of years, a few years, and have the people occupied on something that is really not where the power resides. The power resides in the oligarch, plutocratic class that can really control things and manipulate up and down the line, no matter which division of the government you go to. So, you know, I don't get too much excitement going in my head about these different candidates. They can say anything they want to say, and people have to get that. That doesn't mean they have to do it, even if they're saying something that's beneficial to people. They can say anything they want, and if they get in there, they don't have to do it, or they say they can't do it as some kind of excuse, because everything here is based on what is good for the corporations and the ruling class. And people have to get that through their head, no matter who is running.
So what then do people do if they're interested in change, if you're interested in the empowerment of the people?
Well, if you're interested in change, you cannot just depend on going down and pulling a lever on some voting machine or pressing a button or something like that. It has to be much more. It has to be energized people that will get out there and confront those people face to face on the streets or where they hide out in those state legislatures and the Congress and whatever. You have to go out and get them, you know, in terms of demonstrations and things like that. You can't just write to your congressperson or vote and think that's going to change anything.
What is happening is that those alternative avenues that we used to look to with some degree of confidence, even that is gone.
The progressives are
acting like the Democrats.
The reality is they're closing some of these avenues down. I mean, that shows you the success of capitalism and imperialism in this country, which is much more effective than, let's say, the Western European countries. The point is that that we have to understand that this is that's why people are getting poorer while others getting richer, and people have to get it. People don't understand a system. They don't understand the nature of a system that has the use of white supremacy at its highest level. It's most effective in this country. And, it hurts both so-called white people and black people and people of color in general. So we got to look at that. And, don't think that pulling the lever for one of these candidates is going to do it. So that's the way I see it. And so I'm not very hopeful of any massive change whoever one of these candidates is put in by those who rule. And I say even the ones that so-called, quote-unquote, are progressive, a lot of them are vulnerable to the power of the ruling class, too. So they're in the game, too. That's the way I look at it. I also want
to
say
that...
We'll
have to have a pity party, because
it
looks a little bleak here.
Right. I want to tell everybody I'm looking forward to the 26th. Just like you said, we're not really charging anything, but donations are accepted. It's not inexpensive to do an event like this. So donations are accepted. We're happy to receive that when people register. Also, nobody is going to profit from this, really. It's just a matter of fact that the expenses to run things. So I'm happy when people are able to make a donation. So, that's the way I look at it. And we're looking forward to seeing people on the 26th of May, and that's in New York on 35th Street, 40 East 35th Street, between Park and Madison Avenue. And the registration starts at 12:30, and we're kicking off right on time at 1 p.m. It won't be CPT. Yeah, so that's the way I look at it. And we're going to have some wonderful time together, and that is going to be wonderful. Thank you so much.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Eutrice. Thank you for all that you do.
Thank you so much. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. I hope all is well. Afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you.
You know, already you're beginning to hear, you know, these politicians are like a weather vane. They blow with the wind, and whatever direction the wind is blowing, that's the direction that they take. So you're going to begin to hear a lot of people talking about how their positions have evolved, or you're going to hear people talk about rewrite history. You know, I'm listening to Biden. And, you know, he's talking about what he did or didn't do with Anita Hill. And he, you know, I don't know if he realizes that many of us are young enough to remember what happened. You know, it's like, did we believe our lying eyes and clogged ears? And look at Kamala Harris, you know, all of a sudden she regrets the position that she had on incarcerating parents because of their children's lack of attendance at school. You know, already. So the point I'm trying to make is these are not people who are principled, who are moral, who are ethical, who believe in a position and they stick with that position because it's a correct position. Oh, I didn't really understand what I did when I did it.
Yes, so, but I understood my authority as a prosecutor, and I exercised my authority to the fullest.
Exactly. I had the power. I used it. I can use it, and I'm gonna. Don't apologize for it now. You knew the damage that you were doing then, but you did it anyhow. So the point I'm trying to make is these are not honorable people. You can't believe a word that comes out of their mouth. And so the process is so flawed, the populace is left to their own devices. And why people will, and how, and the method by which people come to a decision one way or the other, I don't know. Because unfortunately, I was listening. Most people get their news from social media. They're not getting it from sources that are credible, and so their decisions are going to be made on flawed information.
Which is why I stress all the time, as you know, make up your own mind. Explore the issues yourself, and you will come to a conclusion that is logical and that you could live with. But you have to move away from the indoctrination of major media and other forms of media that are dealing in a world that doesn't necessarily represent your world. It doesn't represent your values. Doesn't represent your history. So you have to develop your own and not feel embarrassed about it.
You have to be non-apologetic. Non-apologetic. Because it's whatever your viewpoint is, it is based on concrete information, honest concrete information, and then you go with it. And unfortunately, these people cannot engage in critical analysis and thinking that's based on, nobody's talking about the people, that's based on what is best for the people. Nobody is talking about the people, i.e. us. Nobody.
Well, I can't put it better myself. That's exactly what it is. We ought to come to the conclusion that in all of this, that they are talking about a world in which we don't exist, except as targets of the policies that they're cooking up. So we better be on point. We better be on point. Thanks so much, Patricia. Great to hear from you. I hope to see you on the 26th.
You will. You will.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
All right. Goodbye. Phil from Brooklyn, you are the last caller for today.
Good evening, you Trace. Or afternoon, I should say.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you, too.
And, yes, everyone's remarks today have been, you know, quite clear and cogent, and I agree with most of them. I have to say, though, that I'm on the threshold of being despondent and preparing my mind for the reelection of Donald Trump. I hate to say that, but with the lineup of characters and, you know, folks on the Democratic side that are presenting themselves to run gives me great concern. And I see no real clear goals that the party has to really unify in an effort to defeat Trump.
You shouldn't feel despondent at all. That's the one thing I don't want you to feel. Is despondent.
Okay. Okay.
Look at it as your turning point.
Mm-hmm.
A turning point in your own political growth. What is going to happen is going to happen anyway. What
I
you
agree.
Should concentrate upon is your own capacity to understand what is going on and organize your own defense against it.
Okay. Thank you. Well, thank you. That helps.
Because you're disabling yourself. And that's the whole point, to disable millions of us so that we succumb to being despondent. No.
Well, thank you for talking me off the cliff. Because I've almost given up on every time I listen to these news segments, and the first, even especially with NPR, the first thing every hour, President Trump this, I immediately shut it off, and I shouldn't have signed on there to begin with. But yes, you give me some clarity and some hope about really focusing on my own priorities as well as with my communities.
Absolutely. Don't be despondent at all. In
mm-hmm.
fact, in a strange way, you should see this as your liberation. You have
okay.
finally come to the point where you're taking charge of your own interpretation of what is happening to you and a lot of people in this world. And
thank you.
From
I agree.
That, you formulate what your political identity will be, what you will not put up with, what you will
mm-hmm.
support.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much.
Don't be disappointed at all.
I won't. And thank you. And this has been a teachable moment for me, and I'm sure others as well. And I look forward to seeing you on the 26th of May.
Oh,
and thank you so much
too.
For all you do.
I look forward to seeing you.
Okay. Thank you.
When you come up to me to say, I'm not despondent. And I'll know exactly who you are. I am not despondent. I refuse to have these people make me despondent. They're not that smart. They're not that capable to interfere with my brain. I'm in charge of my brain. Whatever is left of it, I'm 100% in charge of it. And I'm not ceding any ground to any of these jokers out there who see themselves as leaders. I am my own leader. I've been this way for a long time. Because when you look closely at what they do, what they say, they really aren't the great joys that they portray themselves to be. They're not the great gifts that we were hoping for. So get used to the idea that you have to take a larger role, a consistent role, in protecting your political turf. That's your job. That's our collective job. Can we do it? I absolutely think we can. But we have to get real about our situation. Don't fall for all of that mumbo jumbo. We have some serious work to do, and we can do it. Thanks so much, everyone who called in today and gave us some solid thoughts to ponder. Please keep your spirits up despite the craziness that's going on around us. That belongs to them. It doesn't belong to me or you. We do have work to do, and that is we have to realign our thinking. We have to revise the way we are operating, because in the end, it will be up to us to save ourselves and the world in which we live. We'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks for listening today. Bye-bye.